This is Cave Scott Allen of otico.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from lazycoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. We're at NDC London. We're talking to Scott Guthrie. He just finished a two-hour talk on it was Azure in production.
Yeah, it's called Building Real-World Apps with Windows Azure. It's basically a patterns-based talk. So it kind of walks through, I think, 12 patterns for building cloud apps. And so things like continuous delivery and source control strategies, you know, logging and diagnostics and best practices there. How do you handle transient faults? How do you handle long-term failures? How do you do partitioning and data sharding and things like that? And basically try to, you know, what do you need to think about if you want to build a really popular, high-volume, high-availability service? The patterns are ones that you need for all cloud apps, but I just happen to use Azure as an example and kind of illustrate, you know, how you go ahead and build these types of services on top of Azure.
Okay. So it seems like about every 15 minutes there's a new post on your blog about new releases, great new things in Azure, and every single one I read it, this is incredible, so much new stuff. How do people keep up with what's the most important new things? Like, you know, if people are kind of generally aware of Azure, what's the top stuff they should know about that's happened, say, over the past year? Like, most exciting?
Lots happened last year.
Right.
In general, kind of the general approach we're doing is basically a major release every 3 weeks, and then we often do minor releases throughout those 3 weeks. And, you know, we're trying to be kind of fairly agile, and, you know, we talk a lot about DevOps, and we talk about how you should build DevOps-based apps or build apps using the DevOps kind of workflow on top of Azure. You know, we're using it ourselves. And so, you know, some of our services on Azure update sometimes 10 times a day in terms of production updates. You know, so that we're kind of do this continuous flow-based approach. So it's a fun kind of model, and it means that we ship a lot of stuff. And, you know, hopefully it means also that we're building features that people really want, because we're able to get the feedback immediately. And, you know, it really optimizes around customer benefit as opposed to going off and spending a year or two hoping right. that we're building something interesting and then discovering at the end that we're not. So in terms of kind of just the scope of the stuff, the past year has been pretty significant in terms of we shipped all of our virtual machine support and our virtual networking support. So you can now run Windows and Linux virtual machines inside Azure. They're durables. If you reboot them, you know, all the data is still there. So it's kind of what you'd expect from a virtual machine infrastructure. We've also supported and added all of our virtual networking capabilities. So you can create your own private networks inside Azure. You can bring your own IP address ranges and subnets. You can do what we call virtual private gateways to on-premise facilities. So if you've got
a lot of the things that previously enterprises would say, well, we can't move everything to the cloud, this kind of helps them around.
Yeah, you can basically have kind of a secure internet or secure connection now to your on-premise environment. And so if you want to keep some applications on-premise, which every large enterprise does, but be able to talk to those very easily from the cloud, you know, we now have a nice way to do it. And you can do it both through an internet tunnel, so it's like a VPN tunnel through the internet, or we also recently announced support for private fiber. And so you could use either an MPLS or like an Equinix broker support and basically have your own dedicated fiber that only your traffic's going over and that you have dedicated network WAS for. You know, we've shipped our website service, which has been incredibly popular. I think we're coming up with 200,000 apps now in production on it. Makes it super easy for you to go ahead and publish an ASP.NET or Visual Studio app, but also supports Node.js, PHP, Python, and other languages. And you can use both FTP, but also Git and TFS, as well as web deploy in order to do a variety of different deployments to it. We added auto-scale support for all of our compute types, including websites and virtual machines and cloud services, so that you can elastically scale up and scale down your web capacity based on your actual real usage, which lets you save, you know, 80-90% sometimes in some apps in terms of cost. We've shipped our mobile backend as a service offering called Mobile Services. So if you want to build an iOS or an Android app and you want to, you know, have a nice native mobile experience or a web mobile experience, you can now easily go ahead and build those types of experiences inside Azure. And we have a bunch of push notification capabilities. So if you want to broadcast push messages to subscribers, to native apps, you can do that as well. Again, that works with iOS, Android, as well as Windows devices. We've got our Hadoop service, so you can now spin up Hadoop clusters in the cloud and process big data. We've got our media streaming service, So you can now stream media, whether it's audio like this, or you could do video recording. And today we support the ability to encode media assets in the cloud dynamically, as well as stream them. Again, we support all devices. And one of the things we're just standing up now, and you'll actually see if you're in the U.S. for the Olympics, actually it's a lot of other parts of the world as well, is our live media streaming service. And so all the Olympics are actually being broadcast live on the web using Windows Azure. And we're actually streaming them through our data centers in a high availability way. So you know, even if we lose a data center, the Olympics doesn't go down. And we're encoding it as well in the cloud as well. So there's probably about 1,000 other features I could go on and mention, but that's just a taste of a few of them. But the cool thing is, you know, we're getting to a point now where not only do we have a lot of features, but, you know, we're continually going back and kind of just bringing them forward. And so, you know, the cool thing about going to a conference like this one is I did the NDC conference in June, mm-hmm. and now it's December. And, you know, a lot of the talks that I gave in June, you know, I talk about features, but, you know, I talk about, oh, here's how you know, we don't have this feature yet, but you kind of work around it this way. And now I can go back and strip out all the workarounds. And now I have, you know, I did, I think about 4.5 or 5 hours of content, this week here of, and I ran out of time on every talk. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff there and it's, you know, we're increasingly going deep on their features. And so it's, you know, it's not so much the volume of features. It's also, I think, how complete we kind of make it. And how do we connect, you know, feature A with feature B so that, you know, the sum is, or the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Right.
Just curious. I know like the elastic scaling was something that people wanted for a long time. How does a feature like that go from, you know, that people are asking for it to it finally has reached a general availability kind of phase?
Elastic scaling is a funny one in the sense of it's one that people asked for a while, and we actually did an acquisition to help accelerate it. And so it was we have a startup incubation program that we run on Azure a couple times a year, and so typically we get about 12 or 13 startups. And so there was a bunch of folks. They were actually ex-Microsoft. They'd actually just left Microsoft. And there's three of them that were doing a startup, and they wanted to do autoscale. And so you know I was kind of their mentor during the project, and then they did. It was with Techstars, a joint incubation. Techstars was one of the big startup incubators. And so they did a you know presentation, I think it was on Thursday, to Techstars in front of all the VCs, which is kind of the big way you graduate from the incubator. And it was a pretty cool product. And so I said, hey, can we meet on Friday? And I chatted with them on Friday and said, hey, I'd like to acquire you. And they said, well, you know, I don't know. And I sort of pulled out paper and said, hey, here's what I'd like to do. And we... gave them a term sheet that day, and they accepted on Saturday, and
wow.
We closed on Monday. So now what we ended up doing is rewriting it because, they were doing the incubator, so it wasn't, you know, it was not like production. It was kind of a minimal viable product.
But they were able to do that just through APIs that you already had exposed.
Yeah, through APIs we already exposed. And then once they were part of the service, they were able to add a few more bells and whistles. And the cool thing is we were able to directly integrate into the UI and the management plane. And so, you know, I think they joined the end of March. And we shipped it in June, integrated inside Azure. So it was a pretty quick turnaround, and that was a complete rewrite that they did. And they're rock stars and very happy and are working on the next set of features, exciting stuff that will be coming out soon.
That was first shown off at Build, right?
First shown off at Build in June. Okay. Yeah, so it's, you know, it's one of these killer features where, you know, once you see it, you're kind of like, God, I so want this.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, it's one of the things I always tell people about the cloud and specifically Azure is – there's three big things when people say to me, like, why Azure or why the cloud? And I always say, it helps you move faster. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the demos I showed this week or things I talked about this week, you know, I would talk about, you know, Azure Active Directory or SQL databases inside Azure or standing up a website, setting up autoscale. And, you know, rather than talk about it and, you know, just make it sound good on a slide, I just go into a demo and say, let's just do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd ask people, you know, how long does it take to create an Active Directory on-prem? And they say, weeks or months. So, okay, let's do it here. And, you know, click, 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 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 1,000, done. And then, you know, SQL database, you ask your IT department, you want a new one, how long does it take? You know, 2 weeks, 2 days, 2 months, someone said 6 months. You know, okay, let's create it. It was 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, done. And, you know, it became kind of a joke by the end, but it, and obviously when you're building solutions, you know, it's not just creating it, you got to do more to it. But it, I think everyone kind of left going, holy crap, like, this is pretty fast. And the time to market of being able to kind of stand up infrastructure in seconds and have all those built-in features just makes you so much more productive. I also think going faster and moving faster is also just in terms of if you want to enter a new market or seize kind of a market opportunity, you know, how do you go into another continent or into another country? Mm-hmm. You know, in the old world, you'd have to stand up your own servers or bounce them back thousands of miles to your existing ones. Mm-hmm. You know, the ability to just, you know, point and redeploy your solution or deploy it in multiple places around the world, you know, really is a game changer for business. And then I also say save money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you show things like autoscale, or you talk about the fact that you pay by the minute and you can, you know, scale down resources that you don't need and you're only paying literally for the minutes you're using them. You know, I think that also a lot of people kind of dawned on them just how much unused capacity most companies still have. Mm-hmm. You know, the typical enterprise probably is only running their servers at about 15% utilization on average. Mm-hmm. And it's because they either buy the capacity so in the future they can use it, or, you know, they buy the capacity for the peak during the day, but, you know, they can't turn it off at night or on the weekends. You know, in a cloud world, you just turn it off and you're not paying and you save so much money. And then the last thing I would say is the familiarity and the consistency with on-premise and the fact that you can kind of use the same skills, the same tools, and build apps that run in both places or more likely connect between both places, you know, ends up being pretty special.
Yeah, that last thing you said about being able to scale down is something I don't think people pick up on right away. Is that, you know, it's like, oh, great, you can scale in the cloud, but scaling down is just as important. And I remember, you know, earlier jobs that I had waiting months to get Prod SQL 02 online. Oh, boy, this is going to be so great. And then, you know, like, it's finally on, and now we have to do all this work to configure it. And then it's true, they bought this huge machine because it was so much pain to bring it online. We don't want to do that again, yeah. You know. So you scale what you want, and then scale it right back down is nice.
And that's, you know, one of the nice things about clouds in general, but Azure in particular, because you only pay by the minute, you know, say with other cloud vendors, usually if you run for 6 minutes, you're paying for a full hour, even if you turn it off. You know, with Azure, you run for 6 minutes, you turn it off, you only pay for 6 minutes. So it's, you know, it handles some of those faster twitch scenarios a lot better, where, you know, your site might elastically go, need to scale up and down, you know, differently every couple hours, you know. Saving an hour here and there does add up over a year. The other thing that we support, which is kind of nice, is the ability to redeploy at a different VM size. And so if you install a database, you can actually install it. And there's a good blog post someone did. It was actually around analyzing the passwords that were stolen.
Oh, right.
From Adobe.
Yeah.
And, but they wanted to run some number crunching. And so what he did was, which is really clever, was he deployed a VM as an extra small instance, which is basically, you know, like $13 a month or something. Mm-hmm. Installed SQL in it, downloaded the passwords, provisioned his entire app, got everything ready, and did, like, you know, simple test. And then basically boosted it to be a 8-core system with 56 mm-hmm. gigs of RAM. But just by rebooting, picking the new size, mm-hmm. everything's already ready. He didn't have to redeploy anything. He ran his query in like 42 minutes on top of 8 cores of processing, persisted out the results, rebooted back as an extra small, and then analyzed it. And, you know, he basically said, look, it cost me, I think it was less than $1 to do this whole exercise, because he only was running it for a minute or only for an hour. But, you know,
right.
Even the 8-core system was only running for 40 minutes or something. You know, once you start kind of wrapping your head around those types of games that you could play, you know, there's real savings, like massive savings that you can do in terms of what you traditionally do. And, you know, in addition to just the savings, it's the flexibility to just move so much faster. You know, where, you know, if you wanted to, you just turn it off and he's not paying for anything and just knows that he can always, within 2 minutes, turn it back on and run a job. And, you know, that ability to kind of move fast, save money, and again, do it in a way that's pretty consistent and familiar and uses the same tools that people have, whether it's in the Microsoft tooling system, VS and SQL and Windows and .NET, or, you know, we support Linux, we support MongoDB, we have SDKs for Java, PHP, Node, Python, Ruby. You can do it with anything. Yeah, I think it's really powerful and makes it fun for developers.
Node and Azure seem to go together pretty well. Isn't the mobile services written with the Node backend?
Yeah, I don't know if we were necessarily the first, but we were probably pretty early in terms of supporting Node with Azure. Right? We had a Node SDK, I think, starting in probably December or November of 2011, which was relatively early before Node became super big. And things like our mobile services backend right now supports Node. It will continue to support Node. We're also adding a C# support for mobile services soon. But yeah, we're big fans of Node. And, you know, I think one of the things about the cloud is also just the compositional nature. You know, you can use Node, you can use .NET, you can use Mongo, you can use Blob Storage, you can use NoSQL, you can use Relational SQL, all within the same app. And you can really choose the tool that makes the most sense. And it doesn't have to be entirely this way or entirely that way. And so there's lots of scenarios where, being able to do it in script makes sense, and there's lots of scenarios where being able to do it in compiled code makes a lot of sense. And it's great if you can do both.
So I just wanted to ask you, you know, done with technical stuff, I know you read a lot. I'm just curious if you've gotten any time to read any interesting books. I think you read, like, biographies and not
yeah.
anymore.
No. I read a lot. I read quite a bit of books. It's my way of relaxing. I'm trying to think what I've read lots this year, mostly for work. But
just on that, I mean, you've had to – so you've moved from, you know, .NET web focus to, I mean, you're talking about DevOps and a lot of kind of broader and also industry standard things as far as networking and so probably a lot of just reading there, homework.
Yeah, I mean, there's parts of my job now which, you know, things like supply chain management. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have data centers and you're bringing online servers, you know, if we bring online servers too fast, we end up having millions of dollars of hardware sitting around idle. Right. If we bring it online too slow, then we have brownouts and, you know, we have stockouts where people can't deploy capacity. So you're kind of getting that right is important. And, you know, so a lot of the stuff I've kind of read and been working on the last year, besides the technical, is, okay, how do we efficiently get our supply chain optimized so that, you know, from signal to being able to have a server live can be measured in days as opposed to weeks or months? Mm-hmm. And how do you do it cost effectively? And so there's lots of stuff I've read, you know, that I never would have imagined reading right. 2 years ago, where I've kind of had to come up to speed on some of this stuff. But yeah, it's almost, I'm reading a good web API book right now. Glenn Block and company have written. Mm-hmm. I have like an early version of the draft, an ebook of it. That's just been pretty good. Usually when I travel places, I try to read something that's relative. So I went to Australia a couple months ago, and so I read Fatal Shore, which is a really good history of Australia and the founding of Australia and all that stuff. So yeah, so it's a couple of good books. I got to dig out my Kindle and figure out what else I have on it. But, yeah.
All right, I guess that's it. We asked for 10 minutes of your time, and it's 20. So I guess we'll call it quits there.
Cool. Thanks for having me.